You're listening to a Share Radio podcast.
Now, the Conservative Party has swept across Britain, making big gains in the local elections. The results confirm the message we were already getting from the opinion polls. A comfortable Tory win in next month's general election looks almost inevitable. For more on this and the latest political news, I'm joined now by Asa Bennett, Assistant Comment Editor at The Telegraph. Good afternoon, Asa.
Good afternoon, Ed.
So let's start with the Tories. I mean, where do they make the biggest gains last night?
Well, it's all, I run out of things to think about here because there's so many gains. This is the thing. You look at Wales, typically a safe area for Labour. Sort of there are the heartlands, you know, Labour was, it was the birthplace in Wales. You
know, sure.
And yet they find that now it's fallen into, they've lost control over there. The Tories are the seized Monmouthshire, and even Scotland, the Tories are on the march. They've taken a sort of a particular ward for the first time ever in Paisley, which is known as the poorest part of Scotland, and you know they've got a councillor. They've got a 20-year-old elected in Glasgow City Council, you know, in effectively their version of the East End. And sort of their appeal, you know, and this leaves aside the fact that they are, you know, cleaving chunks out of UKIP or for what there is left of that party. They've taken over Lincolnshire Council there, you know, many seats across into the north of England. You know, their appeal is expanding all over the place. They are sort of taking things from the Labour, they're taking things from the UKIP, and that's why it's, people are getting quite excited about where the Tories can go next.
So are they definitely going to win the general election then, the Tories?
Well, I mean, it's pretty much nailed on now, sort of, except, I mean, given that I think of this. I can't help remembering that a few days ago, there were Labour candidates panicking before the local elections. They said that Jeremy Corbyn was, quote, radioactive on the doorstep. And
right.
The thing is, we're already seeing a kind of, not quite sort of Chernobyl-style political disaster in a sense, but it's definitely a sort of slow-motion meltdown as we go towards June. You know, the appeal is all over the place. The half-life, you know, is extreme. You know, Labour's appeal is deteriorating and withering away as we speak.
I did hear one commentator saying, oh, well, you know, the turnout in local elections is always much lower than general elections. So the result won't necessarily correspond with the local elections.
Well, that's true to an extent. I mean, I couldn't help looking back over the 1980s when there were local elections. And yes, indeed, they did not precisely predict the margin of Tory victory that then followed in the general election. But actually, they underestimated the margin. In that sort of, so in the same sense, I would not be surprised if it's actually even greater margin because of the following point. For the parliamentary elections, people will be actively thinking, who do they want to, you know, be prime minister, to run the country, to manage Brexit, and then they're going to even greater focus on Jeremy Corbyn. Whereas at least for the local candidates, though, there will be some successes, surely, and Andy Burnham obviously will inevitably be the mayor of Greater Manchester. And that's only because he's done everything he can to not be compared to Corbyn. He's been his own man. In the same sense, Sean Simon, who actually is in a knife-edge election in the West Midlands, he might beat the former John Lewis boss, Andy Street, we shall see. He made points saying that his campaign has nothing to do with Corbyn. So you know, they are distancing themselves from this, you know, toxic party leader.
Okay, well, you mentioned UKIP a couple of minutes ago. Clearly, they've been destroyed. Where did their support go? Did it go all to the Tories, do you think?
I think it's about 90% to the Tories, about 10% maybe to Labour in a sense, because UKIP is a kind of gateway drug for sort of defecting sort of you know voters, and that they can feel they can vote for UKIP, so it's you know fine. Now they've come back to Labour. They feel they realise that there's no other party, I guess, to the left. You know, maybe the Liberal Democrats. It's sort of all over the place. UKIP. I mean, it's even funnier in that besides the fact that as we speak, they have one seat. One council seat currently, and that's the same amount as the Rubbish Party in Scotland.
Good Lord.
Some woman who's an anti-rubbish campaigner, basically. you know, look at Lincolnshire again. Obviously, Paul Nuttall has said that he wants to stand to be MP for Boston and Skegness, or you know, maybe an ambitious goal. It's even stupider now, given that they've lost scores of councillors there. They have no presence there anymore. They have no influence. And so it's hardly a good omen for the party leader's last stand.
Diane Abbott saying today that Labour needs to win over ex-UKIP voters. Obvious thing that Labour needs to do. But, I mean, how should
she
they
get... to talk.
Well, indeed. How should they go about doing that? How could they persuade some of the UKIP supporters to come to Labour rather than
the Tories? Diane Abbott is a star, basically, given that she's someone who is fundamentally committed to free movement. She says it's something that people have to actively fight for. And she sabotages the Labour message every time they talk about immigration. Keir Starmer, he says free movement has to end. He's the shadow Brexit secretary, so he'd think he could speak with good authority. But then, up she pops, suggesting, no, free movement has to stay. Sort of, you know, unlimited immigration has to continue.
But it is difficult for the Labour Party, isn't it? Fine, you've got traditional working class supporters, often in the north of England, who are pretty fed up with life and want and very fervently support Brexit. Then you've got the more sort of metropolitan intellectuals, recent graduates, often supporting Jeremy Corbyn, who really, not anti-immigration at all, are pro-immigration, probably voted Remain. How do you reconcile those two supporting groups?
Well, actually, by being understanding to each other and trying to find a compromise in this. But the trouble is that Jeremy Corbyn and his ilk, like Diane Abbott, they are uncompromising. They actively would berate people as, you know, xenophobes, racists, and think it's pandering to UKIP, in effect. So, you know, although Diane Abbott might make sort of, you know, blandishments about, oh, we need to win back the former UKIPers, you know, she is not going to be the one to do it, in a sense. They have left. They will be voting Conservative in their masses.
You also touched on Scotland, Asa, and I know Labour's lost control of Glasgow Council, Tories winning seats there. What does this mean for the general election? Will the SNP perhaps lose a few seats? Could the Tories gain a few? Could Labour gain any? Or perhaps not, given what we're seeing last night.
I mean, Labour has been on a downward path in Scotland, been shriveling away. And that now, the last Holyrood elections, if I may say, they shrunk into third. And obviously the Tories were prime and place, leader of the opposition now being Ruth Davidson. And I think it's very much likely that we're going to see several seats being picked up by the Tories in Scotland. David Mundell, hitherto the only Scottish MP for the Tory party, is not going to be alone for too long.
And then in the west of England, interestingly, we had a metro mayor down there, and the Tory candidate Tim Bowles has been elected. Of course, Lib Dems used to be very popular in the West Country, had a lot of seats. They lost nearly all of their seats, maybe all of their seats in the West Country in 2015. When we look at that result in the metro area for the Tories, does that mean the Lib Dems aren't going to gain any seats in the west?
Well, I mean, obviously they will try their best, and I think it's actually a problem to do with the West of England mayoralty, and that pretty much no one knew what was going on. There was a mayoral, the turnout was terrible. It was about sort of 29%, which is a testament to how much people really cared about this mayoralty. So sort of Tim Bowles kind of just slipped in by default practically, but even then on a low turnout, you know, it's interesting that the sort of manifestly the default decision was Conservative. They wanted to have a good, as the Theresa May cliche goes, strong and stable hand as mayor, rather than sort of Liberal Democrats. And yet, you look back at the history of Lib Dems, they're meant to be very good at this local campaigning. They're meant to understand people, be in touch with voters. And at this point, it showed that they have very little to offer now, except just moaning about Brexit.
Well, let's move on to Brexit then, away from the elections. David Davis saying that the European Commission is trying to bully the UK, if this follows Mrs May's comments earlier this week that the EU was trying to influence the British election. I mean, are those claims really fair? I mean, surely there was this dinner last week. It didn't go well. Isn't it fair enough for European politicians to say, well, look, Theresa May doesn't get it. She's not on the right planet yet. We need to shake things up and get the message out that actually the UK needs to change its attitudes and change its expectations of what it might get from Europe post-Brexit.
Well, I'm not so sure that the British people want to vote for a Prime Minister who has a night, who has good, nice dinner patter with Juncker. They're quite happy to have someone who, in Theresa May's jargon, is a bloody difficult.
But that's the point, Asa. I'm saying that the EU won't influence the election. They weren't even wanting to influence the election. They know Theresa May's going to win, but they want the British people to understand that it's not going to be as easy as we thought. And then the British people can, if you like, start to at least pressure Tory party to understand that.
True, but then obviously this is going to be a matter of how she squares those expectations, because they still are, in a sense, sky high, and that's obviously, she has the nation's confidence, and everyone else are mere pygmies when they try and pretend that they understand the Brexit process. So I think these are our high days, the salad days, in a sense, of Theresa May right now, and it's going to be a bit sort of, it's going to start getting a bit sour after June, when she has to start explaining, when she said in old speeches that there'll be creative thinking required, and a sort of compromise on both sides, what that horse trading actually means. And UKIP, if I may just talk about a sort of zombie party for a second, they may say, oh, there's going to be a backlash at some point. You just wait. They will find things that they could be proven right on, at least. Whoever's left in the party, if it's sort of, if Paul Nuttall hasn't defected to the Tories by then or something, very much there will be compromises they could point to and moan about. So I suspect that they will try. But for the moment, she's talking that talk, and the thing is, the EU remains intransigent and awkward, and given how they try to batter Britain over the head with this $100 billion bill that we're just arbitrarily upgrading, I mean, I would question there actually may not be a compromise at this rate. The probability of a no deal is rising as the months go on.
If there is going to be a compromise, would you say it's basically around the UK pays a fairly large amount of money to the EU, not 100 billion euros, but a substantial sum of money, and in return we get a transitional deal post-April 2019, so the change in our trading status can at least be smoothed out a bit. Is that where the compromise might be if one happens?
That's where, yes, indeed, it would inevitably have to be around there, because the EU and Juncker, as the briefings all came out, suggested they are explicitly linking the prospect of a good, favourable trade deal towards, you know, cross our palms with silver and pay us the money, in a sense. But given I'm almost borrowing a sort of biblical Judas-style metaphor, in a sense, you know, this is where the British public will not want that. They will not want the idea that we have to bribe the EU practically to get out, in a sense, to have a good deal. So it's almost, given the EU partners, they're sort of just waiting with a bit of a swagger for the Britain to sort of pay up. I mean, Theresa May knows that she's not there to be a supplicant to the EU. She's there to make sure that Britain is a strong, you know, self-independent nation, so that's what she's going to have to do in the end. You know, she cannot just cave in, and that will be at the bottom, in the back of our mind throughout.
Just quickly, French elections on Sunday, Macron the strong favourite. If he does win, is that sort of the end of the populist wave, Trump, Brexit and all the rest of it? Just quick thought on that, Asa.
Far from it, because he has to learn how to govern, and obviously Le Pen then will be odds on to win in 2022.
Great. Very nice punchy thought to end your comments there, Asa. Thanks so much for speaking to us today and also over the last couple of years here at Share Radio. That was Asa Bennett, Assistant Comment Editor at The Telegraph.